It has been said that Rav Dessler's influence in the Ponovitch Yeshiva, which set the tone, which is quite similar in the same way that Rav Yerucham Lvovitz, who was the Mir Mashgiach, was a dominant figure, if you know, in pre-war in the Mir Yeshiva. So Rav Yerucham is known as the famous Mashgiach, of course, of the Mir Yeshiva, and Rav Dessler was the Mashgiach of Ponovitch, and basically the similar type of an influence that Rav Yerucham had in the Mir was Rav Dessler's influence in Ponovitch. Probably the greatest impact that Rav Dessler would have, because was his three times a week, thrice weekly shmuzim. He would give talks three times a week. It was every Wednesday night, Friday night, and also Motzei Shabbos. This was the regular seder of the talks that he used to give. Interestingly enough, that the Wednesday night talk, which was during the week, attracted people from all over because they were able to travel and come from way outside, far from the immediate surroundings. The Friday night and the Motzei Shabbos even, but upon Friday night at least, which did not have the same amount of attendees from the outside, as basically it was the full yeshiva. So then many times on Friday night he would gear the talk something that had to do musa to the bachrim themselves, rather than a general type of talk which would apply for everybody equally, but to take the opportunity then really to speak to the bachrim on a Friday night. But derech klal, his plan was that a shmuz should take about 45 minutes, but it always lasted more than an hour. It never exactly worked out the way that he had planned it. And it's interesting to point out that, as they say, that those talks became very widely known all over Eretz Yisrael. So the truth is that people used to come, it's literally lines of taxis would come from Tel Aviv to Bnei Brak, which is not that far from Bnei Brak, but from Yerushalayim as well, to be able to enjoy and to be part of that, to listen to those various talks. And interesting is that the Chazon Ish himself would send someone to go to be there by the talks to be able to report back to the Chazon Ish. What did Rav Dessler say today? What was his message today? As a matter of fact, his nephew, he had many nephews, one of the nephews was known, Rav Chaim Shol Karelitz, Chazon Ish's nephew. He used to come on Wednesday night, and he used to always say, that a shmuz from Rav Dessler, he says, Mamish Olam Habos, like the world to come. That's the kind of a taste that you'd have by listening to a shmuz from Rav Dessler. It's important to know that in spite of the depth of his mind and his analytical powers, he did not take those talks lightly, like to say, I can just shake them out of my sleeve. Rav Dessler took them very seriously, and it was a product of very serious preparation. Rav Dessler himself used to tell his Talmidim that he used to prepare between 8 to 10 hours for every talk. It's an amazing thing. And he said, but he also qualified that by saying that most of the time was spent deciding precisely how to present the main ideas. In other words, he had a wealth of information stored in his mind. The preparation was really to be able to put it into structure, in a way to present it in a way that would have the best impact, or the most and the greatest impact possible. That would be most of where most of his preparation would go into. And it's interesting to point out that in addition that to the time, here's the Baal Musa for you. In addition to the time that he spent, as we mentioned, on the technical presentation, he says, of the ideas, Rav Dessler equally took a lot of time preparing himself. Meaning, because he used to always test himself to ensure that he was on a sufficient spiritual level to be able to speak on elevated matters. Rav Dessler did not feel it would be right for him to try to speak about a highly or lofty ideas if he was not there himself. And being the owner that he was, he would not believe in himself in the sense that he is really there, and maybe he might not be worthy to be the one to try to present these type of ideas. So in addition to the preparation, to the technical, right, technical style and structure of the various talks, he would take time really working on himself to build up that he felt what he needed, spiritual elevation, to make sure that he is on the level to be able to present those ideas. He once told one of the well-known Talmidim, was Rabbi Yaakov Edelstein, he once told him, he said, that because he was not learning Torah all day, It took him at least 12 hours of preparation to feel worthy to address an audience of Bnei Torah. He felt he wasn't learning enough. And therefore, to address Bnei Torah, who felt they were learning, so he needed to prepare himself, really, that he should feel confident with himself, or comfortable, that he was on the madrega to be able to give Musa to others. So again, this is another certain aspect, of course, of a great Baal Musa, which maybe is not so well known, and that was that Rav Dessler really was a masterful speaker, speaking as far as oratory. The rhetorical presentation, the idea of being a speaker, being able to speak, besides the content, which we know, of course, which he prepared and was very structural, and the depth of his ideas, but his presentation, the power of speaking, was a masterful speaker, and each talk was carefully constructed. And there was one of his Talmidim, actually, a well-known person, we once mentioned him a number of weeks ago, his name was Rav David Tzvi Hillman. David Tzvi Hillman said he was a speaker beyond compare. That's what he would say. He would be a speaker beyond compare, and he said there was no one really like him. All those, by the way, who heard him in Ponovich, those who had the opportunity to hear him in Ponovich, would say that even the enormously influential, the Sefer that we're learning, which is Michtav Melio, which the Michtav Melio basically are the essays that he would speak, right? They would really speak verbally, but there's no comparison, he said, hearing him say it, as to partially learning it from the Sefer. As much as you would take out from the Sefer, you could not compare the influence or even the presentation, the way. The written word was totally different in terms of impact. And besides the different additions that he would add while he was speaking, and to bring out the true flavor, to be able to have the proper influence in his speaking. Another thing, Rav Dessler was not a very tall man, as there are many gedolim, physically not, but spiritually very tall. In spite of that, Rav Dessler required no amplification to be heard throughout the packed Ponovich Beis Medrash. Anybody who saw it, it's a very large Beis Medrash. And it might be quite difficult to speak without a microphone, without amplification, or standing at the beginning, everybody in the front by the Oran Kodesh, and being able to make yourself heard all over. He spoke very forcefully, loudly, and as mentioned, he did not require any amplification. As a matter of fact, his daughter-in-law, he says, was astounded when the first time she heard him speaking publicly in the Beis Medrash, she could not believe, he said, that someone who was so soft-spoken at home could speak so forcefully when he spoke in public. Because in private, he was a very soft-spoken person. And we cannot imagine this is the same person who had the ability to be able to project in the way that he did. As we mentioned, it's not only that. When we're speaking about, you know, being a masterful speaker, he had all the oratorical skills. For example, he would sometimes raise his voice. He would lower his voice for impact and dramatic effect. It was all part of it. Again, he would sometimes even employ humor, sparingly. And the idea when he would employ that is basically when he wanted to ridicule, he did it humorously, until you could really see sometimes when he wanted to ridicule the ugliness of a bad midah. So in order to really present, to make it very vivid, how ugly a bad midah can be, he would give certain illustrations, would be quite humorous. And the foolishness, for example, it would be quite humorous the way that he would present the foolishness of people who are so totally committed to worldly pursuits. And therefore, expending all of your efforts for something which really should be secondary, and overlooking that which should be primary concern. And we say as follows, he would say many times, he said, there are people who would usually say, he says, when you ask them why are they so consumed totally, he says, in all of the business endeavors, they would say, certain people would say, we're being mekayim a mitzvah. They're being mekayim a mitzvah in all of their business endeavors, we're being mekayim a mitzvah, says in the Torah, shesh yom, it says, tasam lachtecho, it's a mitzvah, 6 days a week. 6 days a week. So Rav Dessler used to say, he says, he proposed a simple test to see how much mitzvah you have, you know, how much mitzvah is involved, he says, in your 6 day week. He says, the following question, here's the test, he would say, do spiritual thoughts occur to you in the middle of business, or do thoughts of business come to you in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei? He says, then you'll see exactly where you're at in terms of the relationship, in terms of when you're doing your worldly malacha, and in terms of your avodas Hashem. Talking about the various yikoiches of influence, you know, that Rav Dessler had, it's kedai to mention that The primary appeal, you know, we saw that was the secondary, the oratory skills, but the main thrust of it was really the intellectual prowess. Intellectual prowess, and we said the other thing was simply, as we mentioned, it was for seasoning. The oratory effect was the seasoning, or so it was like the icing, but the true impact, through when one would listen to hear what really which was the message, and it was mentioned that the way that he presented his talks, that even someone did not have the ability to really plummet the full depth, to understand the full message, but nevertheless you would always go away with something. There'd be enough to hear in whatever Avdesla had to say, that everyone went away with something, even though maybe you did not get out the full message of what he intended to convey. And the idea was he would break down the fundamentals of Jewish belief as you see it throughout the Sefer into the most basic components, and basically would provide strong definitions for each concept. And we say as follows, in times he said it, Rebbe Povarsky, you know, is one of the today Rosh Yeshiva in Ponovich, Rebbe. So he would say to him like this, he says, I'm speaking for an audience, he says, of Lomdei Torah. And I have to ask questions, he says, that excite them, that he says, that create intellectually, he says, tension. And Mavele, this in fact, so Rebel used to say his questions were questions, but his answers were also answers. The idea, interesting, is that it's a well-known fact, that two young men, not very from at all, put it mildly, coming from Ramat Gan, one was the head of a left-wing, you know, Mapai party, branch of the city, the other one was a local pharmacist. As they were walking by, they'd be walking by the street, and they saw the large Ponovich yeshiva. So they saw the building, saw the curiosity, they peaked, so they decided to go in. And guess what? They entered right in the middle of Rav Dessler's talks on a Wednesday night. After that, they were so struck by what they heard that they asked when the next talk would be. They said, well, again, it'll be the next Wednesday night. Eventually, they began coming every Wednesday night, and also Mitzvah Shabbos, which required more than an hour walk. They sat right up front, he said, opposite Rav Dessler. So I just want to mention this, that a group of Bachrim once approached the Chazon Ish and asked them how they could positively influence other Bachrim. What's the Yetzer? How can we positively influence other Bachrim? The Chazon Ish told them to ask Rav Dessler, he said, because he is the expert how to influence others. So again, so he was the one that had that power and had that koyach, and it's evident, of course, from the legacy that he left. So what we're going to do now, Rabbi Sai, we're going to see an interesting essay. This is going to be, this here, it's Perek Zayin B'Shifa, it's page 39. Yeah, page 39, and the title of this essay, it's a hemshech of what, this is called She'ifa, which is called Ambition. Now, you have to understand, when you talk about ambition is something that's very, very important. But at the same time, with the idea that Rav Dessler is trying to present is that if it's not controlled, ambition can be also very dangerous as well. And here's the way Rav Dessler, here's the way how he formulates and develops the idea. Take a look at page 39. Perek Zayin B'She'ifa. It says as follows. B'nei Odom, he says, Maritzim es Odom HaShoyif. People in general, they admire the ambitious person. That's the way it is. People in general, they are married, they admire the ambitious person. Not only that, the chain somim leiv lechanech is b'neiem lehiyoysom bali she'ifo merits. People do their best to educate their children that they should be full of ambition and drive. Gam kvar kosav echod achoshvim. There's also been said by some to the extreme, that ambition is life itself. Question is, is that really correct? Rav Dessler tries to point out what ambition, what's the secret behind ambition, what is the drive behind ambition. If you go deep and you try to find what it's rooted, what is the driving force behind ambition, so he says the following. The truth is, ambition is a hunger. Kasha yishav harov le'echol. In the same way, he says, that a hungry person craves food, so too, he says, the ambitious person craves the object of his ambition. It's a hunger. There's different types of hunger. There's physical hunger. So in the same way, he says, that a person that's hungry, he craves food. Kocho kol ha-sheyishav elav ha-odom, ro'ov hu lo'y sadover. So Rav Dessler says there's an ambition person, basically. He's hungry. He also craves, he says, the object of his ambition. Al-Kain, therefore, Toz G'doyle Toa Choshevahu. It's a great mistake to think that ambition is life itself, he said. The Omroi, when one said, Shashifa Chayim, because Hara'ava in a Chayim, because hunger is not life. Ambition is hunger. It's a form of hunger. And hunger is not life. El Hachai Ro'ov Hineu. It's just the opposite, he says. It's the stimulus, right, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted in a living person, hunger. The feature of hunger. He says, the sense of hunger, as a lachai rov hineu, a person whose life is hungry, until basically he satisfies himself. Horavoin, hunger is something that Kosh Baruch Hu implanted bibruim. Kosh Baruch Hu implanted in the creatures, laman haskirom ala maisim ashiyasu likiyim gufam. Hunger is something necessary that people would be able to remind themselves that they have to do what they have to do to survive, they have to eat. If a person would not feel hungry, he would not know when to eat. And if he won't eat, they wouldn't be able to live. So hunger is a feature that merely that Kosh Baruch Hu implanted in a living person to be able to do the right things, right, in order to be able to survive. Kocho, he says, in the same way also, similarly, all ambitions are a type of a hunger. Gam shar ha-she'ifois mine re'ovo in heino. All ambition, says, are some type of hunger. Sheluchei Yitzra Lubavenu, they are the emissaries of our Yetzer, of our inclinations, sometimes for good, sometimes bad. Sometimes a craving for good, you have a hunger for good, sometimes you have a craving for bad. So it's either from the Yetzer Toiv or from the Yetzer Hara. So now he goes on to say as follows. This Baina Noba Balachayim. So I want you to take a look, he said, at the animal kingdom. You see the animal kingdom of Nimso, and you're going to find out that ki kol ha-re'evim yoichlu v'yizbohu lo yosifu le'echol ade yiravu oid. You take a look at the animal kingdom and you find out that hungry animals eat until they're satisfied and they don't eat again until they're hungry once more. There's a limit. There's a discipline. This is the way it is. This is the way Kosh Baruch created the nature of animals. Animals, they eat when they're hungry, until they're satisfied, and they will not eat until they're hungry again. Except one exception. Zulas, he says, ha-chazir. Except the chazir, the swine, the pig. Perhaps there's an exception. Yoichal b'li heref. He said, eats all the time. Kila yizba li'oilon. It seems that he's never satisfied. Kogagam ho'odom, he says, a person suffers from the similar disease. Person says, human beings suffer from a similar disease. Oyev kesef, he says, lo yizba. Human being suffers from a similar disease, as the Pasuk says, one who loves money, Shlomo HaMelech says, will never have sufficient money. Verov lo ilomim, he's eternally hungry. He's always hungry. Zehu choyli ra. He says, this is something, of course, which is a choyli ra. V'lo yiravin ha-kesef levado. The don't think it's just, he says. It's not just the hunger for more money that dominates him. That yishloi todir ul yoylom. It's not just that, but a kol ha-shifas achumriyas. But the truth is, it's the same with all physical desires. All physical desires and ambitions, the more one attempts to satisfy them, kol ha-shifas achumriyas. All, he says, the physical desires, komoyu heim, the same thing like the desire for money or so on, ki kifi asher yasbiyam ho'odom, the more that a person tries to satisfy that desire, that hunger, the more that he attempts to satisfy it, the more intense the hunger becomes. And, as a matter of fact, as he points out, a chazal, he's for the sake of tznius, he does not spell it out, but if you take a look here on top, the page number 40, the kocha omru chazal, al echad harisoynis achumriyim. Chazal talk about one particular area of desire, where chazal say, mazbioi ro'ov. He says, the more you try to satisfy, it has to do with things in the bedroom. And he says, the more that a person tries to satisfy it, if he's not controlled, then the more hungry he's going to be. So it's never shocked to be satisfied. On the other hand, Chazal say, if a person exercises control in those type of areas, then he will matter of fact find that the desire also will subside in a way that he'll be able to be controlled and will not consume him. So now he goes on further. Benoshev is Bayanin, he says, let's reflect further. Kichas Hashem al achazir v'yirachameyu. We see how Kodesh Baruch Hu had mercy, said, on the pig, in the sense that Kodesh Baruch Hu really increased its food supply in proportion to its appetite. Why? Because the pig finds food in all the garbage. So he doesn't have to have, you know, special food or favorite food, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because in conjunction with his appetite, HaKadosh Baruch Hu increased his supply in proportion with that. All the garbages and all the areas, right? All the refuse, right? The pig is there ready to eat it. He picks up that which other creatures have thrown away, right? The pig picks it up. Let's skip the brackets, go down three lines. Al Kain, he says, therefore it comes out, because Baruch Hu gave him this insatiable desire that he wants to eat all the time. Because Baruch Hu also therefore said that all type of food will be okay for him. He's not going to be any particular. So in order to the proportion, that the desire that he has, because Baruch Hu also increased his food supply, as he points out. What comes out of it is continuously, he's fulfilling himself, right? He's able to appease it. He says, as he goes on, of the chazer, it's a continuous life, so to speak, continuous pleasure. Because that's what he's doing all the time, and he has it at his disposal. But loikein odom, but man is not like that. Man is not like that. In other words, man cannot be a human pig. Loikein odom, horo'ov letavas yitzroi. He said, this is not the case of man. A man who hungers for that which the Yetzer Hara craves, he says, Rochikhu mimenu ma'oid. The fact is that what he yearns for is far beyond his reach. That which he hopes to get, that which he hopes to attain, is far beyond his reach. As he points out, Rochikhu mimenu ma'oid, milchoma kivedo. It comes out that he's going to have, he says, it's going to be a heavy battle. And he's going to have to expend a lot of effort, he says. Ubemeretz rav, and a lot of effort, yelochem, he's going to have to fight ad yagia apel chelik min shufosoy. Even to attain even a chelik of that which he desires. Vimgam shonim harbe yichye. And even if he lives many, many years, he'll never achieve even half of that which he desires. Layasik el chetzio. Kishom chazal. Famous Chazal, where the Gemara says, "Ein odem yoytzim in oilam, bechotzi tavosa biyodoi." Most people who are so ambitious, who are so desirous, who were always involved, right, in pursuing more and more, most people don't leave the world even attaining half of that which they desired. And then it goes further. Ve'ro'o mezeh. But I can show you, says, that the situation is even far worse than that. I'm talking about uncontrolled ambition. You're going to find out, he says, that a person is not only hungry for what he actually needs at any given time. He's not just hungry for what he needs now. What's worse is, but his hunger is intensified because he's always concerned that he may lack something in the future. What may happen many years ahead in the future? In other words, so far ahead, he worries now about things that are so far ahead that it's very possible that unlikely he will not even be in the world, he says, at that time, that he's worried about what's going to be at that time, as he goes on to say. Asher efshe shiagienu lahabo, he says, he's worried about the yachpil sarava in agod lazed, he's going to multiply that desire, he's worried, he wants to now be able to map out what's going to happen, right, in future times. He even is concerned, and he's starving and craving to be able now to take care of situations in the future. He's very doubtful, even, truth be told, will even be alive at that time. That is the human nature of a person. Uncontrolled ambition. Not only that, the gam yiriv l'chashash rav im bonov. It goes more than that. A person's hunger extends also, he says, either to the real or imagined needs, what his children needs, and about his grandchildren. So now he's going to worry about the next generations down. So he's now going to be worried to take care of all of those situations. That's all part of his ambition. So when a person really is driven by that kind of ambition, you know what that means? This is what his life looks like. Ad yachrichenu ravoinoi hagodol. It means, he says, that therefore, he says, this accumulated hunger, to be able to take care for all the needs of future years, and maybe for his children's needs, and maybe for his grandchildren's needs, and so on and so forth. Ad yachrichenu ravoinoi hagodol, this tremendous hunger, lavoid avoidas perech lachonas kozei. He himself will have no life in this world. He's worrying about the next generation. He's about the third generation, the fourth generation. He's going to be totally, he says, he's going to have be involved in back-breaking toil, as he says. And he's worried about all types of speculative, right? Possibilities of theft, he's worried about that. Possibilities of failure, and the loss of all that he has, that also consumes him, that's also on his mind. And the more that he worries, he says, the more that he tries, he says, to amass wealth and so on and so forth, the Yosef Lahokir Achon Rabba, and the more that he tries to provide, right, against the future, Kochalimosa, the balance on the other side is, Yibud Agoysov. All that intensifies, his worries increase. He says, Vigdal Rabbeinoi, and now his hunger grows even more, Atche Yila Nesoi, until it becomes actually intolerable. To that point, if you don't nip it in the bud. So he goes on and points out and says, "Ushifos halolu shalachon yamloi meneged." He said these cravings to provide for the future to that extent stand in his way and really prevent him from enjoying what he has now, because he's always busy, right? Always busy with back-breaking toil and so on and so on. All more for that. So when is he going to be able to enjoy anything? As he says, it's not going to allow him to be able to enjoy that which he needs for now. He says, so even were possible for him to still his immediate needs, at least in part, but the other urges deny him this satisfaction. He says his life is nothing but one terrible hunger, as he points out. And basically he's worn and he's still hungry. Hungry doesn't mean physically hungry. But a person who just ended up with an unfulfilled, unsatisfied person. Now, to illustrate this, many months ago, we just spoke it out verbally from an essay which Rav Dessler himself said that you might remember that he encountered a pack of wolves, he said, in one of the northern countries. Very interesting how he says, and just watching the wolves and see what you learn and see how you relate it, he says, to human behavior. And he says as follows, very, very fascinating. He says, of Nishonim Harbe. He says, many years ago, he says, Benedudi Derech Arzai Zat Sofoin. He says, I was wandering, he says, somewhere in the lands of the north. Ra'isi, I saw Adas Ze'evim Re'evim. He says, I observed a pack of starving wolves. He says, I observed a pack of starving wolves. Rotsim u'mechapshim zoinon. Right? They're all running, trying to search food, as is common. Finally, v'yimtsu nevelas chaya katano. Finally, they find, right, the body of a dead animal, of a small animal, he says. Mushlechas al darkom, which was lying in the path. So what did they do? He says, "V'yikvesu kulam aleu mevuholim udchafif." So all the wolves, babasachas, all the wolves at the same time, right? All the wolves, he says, they all pounce on it with tremendous intensity. Avol yoichlu lechol teres. Rav Dessler says, I noticed that no one was able to devour the prey. You know why? Because each was busy fighting off the other one. Each was busy fighting off the other one. Kikol echod men kofetz al gabei chaveiro. Because each wolf attacked the neighbor, his other one, pushing him out of the way, pushing him away, right, without any leaving him any space. One bit each other, they were fighting each other, he says. You know, at the end of the day, Rav Dessler says, it turned out that they all were wounded and they were bleeding profusely. The koi nilchemu, and this is the way they continue to fight. They fought until they all lay exhausted. They all exhausted, he says, on the snow, and only a few of them, the strongest among them, he says, the strongest among them at last were able to put their teeth, he says, into the carcass, as he says. Like a chodim, hagibayrim behem, the strongest of those wolves, he says, just a few. Hey, musomu shinei benevela. They able to put their teeth in the nevela. The tavoy rega, he says, a moment passed. Vine gam ela hischaru zebazek. Guess what? The stronger ones also started fighting with one another. So now the few, the remaining wolves, the strongest among them, they also began to fight one another, he says. Ve'yeshuvu ve'yaku v'yinashu yisrael. And each one continues to bite and to claw, right? One another, wounding one another. Noshech ha'petsua ad ho'echad gover. Until finally, he says, one of them was victorious. One of them was victorious, says, and he snatched, he says, the carcass away with his jaws, right? The yachtev hanavela, the yonos, and he runs off. Okay, now see the next page. Says Rav Desler, he says, Benanti Lemare. He says, Benanti Lemare, he says, I took a look at that, I reflected, he says, on this savage scene. For you see, I saw it. The one that was victorious, the one that ran off with the whatever's left of that carcass. He was the victor. I observed when he was running away, he says. He's Benanti Lemare, he says, I was observing him and I reflected. And I saw the Menatzeach, I saw the victor, Rotz Merochik. I saw how he is running in the distance. Vehine called Darko Yashirotz Oleo, he says. His path over the snow was all marked by bloodstains. He was also bleeding. Maybe he won, right? Maybe he won, but it was a bloody battle, he says. A bloody victory, he says. Midomo Yashizov Mipsov Horabim, he says, from the blood that was running, he says, from all these, says, the many, many wounds, Ashipitsua Chaveroth, that were instilled, he says, by his Chaverim. So Marty Lilibis, I said to myself, this is literally, he says, his food cost him his blood. Hey, Bedomayhu. It cost him his blood. Guess what? He's not hungry anymore. But he paid for that with his blood. It cost him blood, but at least he managed to fill his hunger. So what could apply what we say, you know, in this Sanatoikif? You might remember, Benafsha Yovilachmoy. This is the Benafsha Yovilachmoy, he says. Right through his life, or by his life, rather, he obtains his bread. This is what happened. No, says Rav Desler, he says, you know what I learned from that? He says, first of all, he says, I looked at the others. What about the others that remained, the other wolves? The Shafti Varisi Benisharim. Then I took another look, he said, at the others. The others were even more wounded, he said, than the Gibber was. They were even more wounded. Doma Movad, he said. He said that they had lost blood, the Koicham Sormehem, and the strength was gone. So Mahoyil Bamchalza, at the end of the day, what did they gain by fighting? At least the victor gained something. But all of them were fighting, and only one gained something out of it. So what did they gain? They're wounded, they're bloody, they could have even died. Yagishu, and not only that, Yagishu Kherpas Munasochim. They all have to suffer the indignity of being a loser. In addition to everything else. He says, Ashachaveiram Hukam. The Gam Ochel, not only that, not only says, he says, the stronger one beat them, the stronger one also, in addition to beating them, he ended up having the food and becoming satisfied, he says. Ochel v'sova v'doshim. The heimusveya makis, they only became satiated with makis. That's the sviya that they had. The Gam Ravoinom, he says, and the hunger for which they fought beginning remains more intensified than to begin with. So they were fighting because of hunger and they ended up being more hungry than ever. The Gam Ravoinom, he says, because of the hunger, Zeh Asher, this hunger, Shlomam, his bioi nilchemu, is for that hunger that they hoped to satisfy it. They went to war. It's just as powerful as it was to begin with. The Desla said, he says, that is really the life history of most people, he says, on this planet. He says, unfortunately, he says, Ato bihizboinani. He says, what now when I reflect, he says, on the hunger of man as well. I look at the hunger of man, Atab is boinin liravo, and he says, Hashoyef lechumriyas. I look at the man who is hungry, he craves for material things. Also, bezichroini hamaisa azois. The memory of earlier times, he says, comes to me. He says, and it serves as a moshel, kiti a moshel bnei odom. That serves as a moshel, he says, for human situation. And that is, hein gam hamanatseach beizcharus, he says. The victor in the battle of life also comes out wounded, ill, and exhausted. In the life of material, in the world of materialism, even the one who wins, he says, he comes out as this petzua achoyle oyev yageya. He becomes basically, as we see, he becomes ill and he's exhausted. The gamkin it's choynoi ashe notzach einenu shovim. And the truth is, at the end of the day, the victory that he acquired is not really a victory because he's still hungry for more and more and more and more and more. So where does it end? Where does it end? Because the truth is, he will never satisfy that hunger, that craving. Just the opposite. It'll become redoubled. It'll become intensified. Gomer is mentioned. Avil, he says, if this is the way, now, this is even the one who won. Now, what about most of the people, right, who are in this competition and they are all losers? So imagine how much they lost now. He says, if that is the fate of the one, right, who was the victor, so my yechelik hamenutzach, so what is now the chelik of all the others, right, the fate of those that actually lost in the competition of life? And most of the people of the world are not the winners, he says. Right, they are the losers, he says, in their competition. Hare lamadnu. So what finally, so what do we learn? So if that's the case, he says, so finally, so what we learn from all this, he says, is what we said above. And that is, ki ashoyef, he says, a person who has this tremendous, tremendous, uncontrollable ambition, he is starving, he's hungry. Haro'ov hu ha'umlo, the hungry one is the most miserable, he says, shebechol habruim kulam. Of all the creatures that Hashem created, this person, he says, is the most miserable, the most misfortune, he says. And Mamele, he says, so the avoid, of course, of a person is to be able to control his and put his ambitions really in the right place. So if we stop over here, we can take a look at the sheet and see now the other side of ambition, which is the positive side of ambition, and the chelik of ambition, which in fact is a person is encouraged, and we find out again the tremendous accomplishment, of course, which ambition can bring a person if it is channeled in the right direction. Another sheet, much. The first item that we have here is from Chaim Shmulevich in the Sefer Sichas Musas in Parashat Tetzaveh, Toshin Lamed Aleph. And here's a very fascinating thing. We know when it came to building the Mishkan, we find the following phrase: who are the people that were commissioned to build the Mishkan? Well, the Pasuk says one thing, the requirement or the license. What are the qualifications to build a Mishkan? The Pasuk says, Va'ato tedaber, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you speak al kol chach milev. Speak to the wise-hearted people. Achim milesiv ruach chochma, whom I have filled with the spirit of chochma. What does chach milev mean? Chach milev, wise-hearted people. We think that Chochmah might be in the mind, Chochmah is in the head, Chochmah is in the brain. What does Chachmei Lev mean? Wise-hearted people. And he goes on to say, V'adayinenu ne'yoidim, says Reb Chaim, Perusha shel Torah zeh. U'mi zoich eliyos nikro b'tor zeh. Which is the person, right, that has a schus to be called, where do you have to reach to be called a Chachmei Lev? Where do you have to be in order to be able to have this title be called a Chachmei Lev? He goes on to say as follows, Ochim emash omar akosuf. Pasuk says another thing. Ubelev kol chach melev nasati chokhmah. Repeat this pasuk. Because Baruch Hu says, in the heart of chach melev I've given chokhmah. Well, is he a chokhmah before? When is Hashem is giving chokhmah to someone who is already a chach melev? So it means the chach melev is not yet a chokhmah. Because it says, ubelev kol chach melev nasati chokhmah. Again. The Pasuk says, in the heart of kol chach melev nasati chochma. On the Lamedim we see, sheyesh shelev chocham tzorech lehechem le'atzma yodam b'koychehu. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I give chochma to the one who is a chacham lev. So to become a chacham lev, that's your job. That's what Hashem is giving you. Hashem is giving you the reaction to that. If you're a chacham lev, I give you chochma. So to become a chacham lev, that's not what Hashem is doing for you, that's what you have to do. The question is, so what does it mean? What is the tafkid? What does it mean to be a chacham lev? If you're a chacham lev, then Hashem says, I'll give you chochma. So the question is, what is that? What is that hachon of being a chacham lev? Ubechein miu, he says, who is this chacham lev? Ashkosh bochum meyut, ki hu noisim le chochma. So who is the chacham lev that Ashkosh bochum says, I'm giving him chochma? Milonu chocham kishloime hamelech olav hasholem. So let's take a look at the wisest of all. Who is a greater chocham than Shloime hamelech? Sheomer olav akosu, the posuk says in Tanakh, Vashem nosan chochma lishloime kasha diber. Hashem gave chochma to Shloime as Hashem promised him. So let's take a look at the chocham of Shloime. By the way, Shloime Klieger, you know, we have one of his many, many svarim, also named Shloime. So on the Hagoyes and Shulchan Aruch, he calls it chochma Shloime. So Mamela was called the Chochem Mikol Adam. And we find the Pasuk, Hashem gave Chochem to Shloime. So one of the Sfarim of Shloime Klieger is called, in fact, is called Chochem Shloime. So let's take a look at the Chochem Shloime HaMelech. U'memenu novin, and from Shloime HaMelech, we'll understand it's that derech liskois b'chochma. Let's find out what was the secret that Shloime HaMelech was zoche to Chochma. In what schus was he privileged to be the smartest man, the wisest one? Why did Hashem choose to give him more Chochma than anybody else? Loma nosan Hashem chokhma l'shloime. Uma goyron or goram l'shloime kol zois. So it's quite simply, he says. Open up a Tanakh. Haloi hu kosev mevur l'malu memenu. Look at the posting in Tanakh, Melachim Aleph Gimel. It says as follows. Begivoy nira Hashem l'shloime. Hashem appears to Shloime Melech in Givoy. Vayayim Elohim. Hashem says to Shlomo HaMelech, I grant you a wish. He says, you have the choice. You can wish to be the richest man in the world. You have a choice to be the healthiest and long living person in the world. You can have arichas yomim to live beyond the average lifespan of anybody else. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, tell me what you want and I'm going to grant you that wish. It's what happened. Ask what I should give you. And Shlomo HaMelech says, it's not riches that I want. It's not wealth that I want. It's not arichas yomim that I want. I want chokhmah. I desire to have chokhmah. That's my wish. Shlomo HaMelech said that he forgoes any other, he says, side benefits that he was able to attain, just merely by asking for Hashem for it. You give to your servant Leif Shemeya, Lohovin, Bein Toiv L'ra, to be able to have a clear understanding between what's good and what is bad. Being that you chose that, you did not choose wealth and the other things, I'm going to give you chokhmah, you're going to have the other things as well. You chose wisely. You didn't ask for yomim rabim, to have arichas yomim. You did not ask for ashiris. Shlomo HaMelech becomes the smartest person. Becomes the person who is known as the chokhmah mikol odom. Says Reb Chaim, what do you see from that? What do you see from this pasuk? What do you see from this? From this episode? Nizbar mikan. What you see from here, ki zocha shloim al chokhmah, the reason Shlomo HaMelech, right? Why was he zoche to have chokhmah? One thing. Ach barak babur tushu, kosoi har bel chokhmah. Because he desired chokhmah more than anything else in the world. If you desire chokhmah more than anything else in the world, that creates a tremendous kli that you have se'at d'shmak is going to give you chokhmah. To be able to merit chokhmah min hashemayim, you have to desire it. To the extent that you're going to desire it, Hashem will give you chokhmah. Without enough desire, you're not going to get it. Shlomo HaMelech showed how choshev, how important, how chokhmah surpasses anything else that he might want. That tremendous, tremendous, endless desire, strong desire for chokhmah, that would merit Shlomo HaMelech to be given chokhmah, to be granted chokhmah. Shlomo HaMelech was zoche b'avur tishu kosoi har bei al chokhmah. He had a tremendous desire. Koi hishtoike kal chokhmah. His desire to chokhmah was so strong, at sheviter, that he was able to give up oisher varichas yomim. And even though, as Reb Chaim says, the truth is, the gift of life really is more important than anything. And yet we see that Shlomo HaMelech, instead of asking for the gift of life, right, to live another 50, 60 years or whatever it should be, he didn't ask for the gift of life. What he asked was for the gift of chokhmah. You know why? Chaim says very beautifully. Because living without chokhmah is not really living. Living without chokhmah is not really living. This is Chaim. This is the way he touches it up. The gift of life. Life is the most important thing. But he didn't ask for that. He asked for chokhmah. Because without chokhmah, it's not worthwhile living that long. This is what he points out. Ve'af ki usher achayim choshev u'mekoil. And even though he says the good fortune of living is more important than anything, ach yoda b'shlom elchnu ki chayim b'li chokhma ein lem erech klal, that chayim, living without chokhma, doesn't have much value. Because of a Rambam, and there's a Rambam to that. Rambam says v'chaye bala chokhma, the life of people who are bala chokhma umakshe, who pursue it b'loy talmud Torah, they're not able to learn ki misa hen chashuvim. In other words, a person who is a Baal Chochmah, if he's not able to use his Chochmah, he's not able to learn more, it's as if he's not alive, it's like he's dead. You might remember the Halacha L'Maaseh, that's why the Gemara tells us, you know, the Halacha is if somebody kills B'shoigig, right, murders B'shoigig, so the din is what's the Halacha, he has to run to the Orei Miklat, because otherwise the Goel Adam, the relative of the victim, is able to kill him. So the din is, again, if someone who murders B'shoigig, so the din is that he runs to the Orei Miklat. The Gemara tells us that if he has a Rebbe to whom he is connected with very strongly, the Rebbe has to follow him in Orei Miklat. It's an amazing, amazing halacha. The Rebbe now becomes burdened. The Rebbe now becomes burdened and becomes confined to the Miklat to follow the Talmud. Why? Why? You might remember the pasuk. It says by the person who flees to the Orei Miklat, who Yonus, right? Achas ha'orim ho'elo v'chai. The reason he's running to the Orei Miklat is to be able to live. Says the Gemara, living means Oved Le Milse De Chiyuse. Give him that which makes it worthwhile living. And if he's a Talmud who has a Rebbe, which means that learning Chochma is his life, without it, Kemisa and Cheshuva, he's not living. That's what the Rambam applies it to. That Bala Chochma, who are not able to utilize the Chochma, you don't give the opportunity to learn. Without learning, people are intellectually involved. If you don't give them the opportunity to learn more and more, their life is like Misa. So therefore the Talmud, which the Torah says, give them the opportunity to live in the Ormikot, living Ormikot. Without his Rebbe, he's not living. He says, V'choy. This is the idea. Now, so he says, V'hashir v'agvul bebikush achra chokhma. The shir, he says, and the gvul of searching after chokhma, nitem lilma mesad hara. The positive we learn from the negative. Because you see, desires, we're talking about desires, we're talking about negative ambitions. We're talking about ambitions and craving, starvation for material. We saw the negative side. But you want to see the extent of craving and ambition on the wrong side? Learn, if that's the opposite side, then learn now on the positive side, you have to have the same equal amount of ambition for the good side. What do we see on the bad side? That's from Homan Arosha. It's a well-known thought, idea, that he mentioned, it's mentioned, you know, in many different forms, the idea. Let's take a look as false ambition, false desire on the negative side. We can learn it, he says, Mitzad Hora, Mamavakish Acher Kovet, someone who, for example, is sick over Kovet. Every moment of the day, he's just pursuing COVID. Anything that'll bring him COVID. To the extreme. Lomoshlo. May of the Esther Mesheva Medina, Koir Mishtachvim, Lahomen Rosha. Homen Rosha, right? Is the minister, is the star, right? Achashverosh, 127 Medinas. So you have everybody, right? Everybody is Koir Mishtachvim, Lahomen. So you can imagine thousands and thousands of people, right, are bowing down to Homen. So the whole world is bowing down to him, the entire kingdom, not one kingdom, 127 million. There's one person, so it's Mordechai Yehudi, there's one person not. And where does he go? He goes to town with it. He can't exist. He can't live with it. He's consumed with it. He's consumed with COVID so much that even there's one person not giving him COVID, he can't take it anymore. His life is not worth living. He says, you have hamoyim berevach lein tachlas. You have so many people without a shear that are bowing down. Like echad v'yochid loy kom v'loy zol. Just one person that didn't move. Uma erech yesh la echad lumas yam ho odom misoviv. So he says, what dent does it make if one person, right? If in the ocean of people who bow down to you, in the ocean, use the moshul, the metaphor. You have an ocean of people bowing down to you. You have one little drop. He says that doesn't. So what? What does the difference does it make? What value does it have? Boyerei says, "Ma'oyim al kach Homan Rosha." But look what Homan says. Homan's not merely saying, "I want Mordechai." Kolzen Eneshovali. Even though they do bow down, doesn't mean anything to me. If this one single person doesn't do it again, it's not just saying I'm missing him. If he doesn't do it, he doesn't give me COVID, then all the COVID is not worth anything. It's a normal way of COVID, pursuing COVID. If one little drop of the yam is not serving me, he says it's not worth it. So, if a person can have such a tremendous, tremendous, extreme overreaction, desire for COVID, that's the type you should have for Chochma. That was like Shlomo Melech on the other side. That's the type of chuk, as he says. But Heichon, he says, take a look further. You can all sit from Yeshua Benun. To the extent how far a person should be mishtadl to try to pursue wisdom, Chochma. You might ask a question, why was Yeshua Zoyche? Why was Yeshua Zoyche to become the Mamalamokim, to become the successor to Moshe Rabbeinu? Ksiv, open up a chumish. The pasuk says, "Ish asher ruach elokim boy, upirish hasparnu." And what does the sparnu say? The sparnu says, "Muchen lekabel or penei melachayim." He's ready. Now, muchen lekabel. He's a person that is open to receive and to receive and to receive. Ge'in shekosuv ubelev kol chacham lev nasati chochma. In other words, chacham lev is not chochma. Chacham lev desiring chochma. That's the pshat in the posik we started out with. The posik said ubelev kol chacham lev nasati chochma. I give chochma, said the shkorchu, something who's a chacham lev. Who's a chacham lev? Chacham lev, the person who has desired it. A person has tremendous desire for chochma. He's called chacham lev. Means his heart is there. His heart is in the right place. His heart is connected to Chochmah. His heart wants to have Chochmah. So a Chacham Lev, therefore, means the person who desires Chochmah. If you are a Chacham Lev, you desire Chochma, so Belev kol Chacham Lev, Nasati Chochma. I, in fact, will give Chochma. So we end with a little beautiful story here. If you see here in the bottom, this is from the Sefer Lekech Toiv, Chel Kalif. They bring down the Hagoyin of Chaim Shmulevich, Sipper of Talmidov. Very beautiful little story. Chaim Shmulevich once told his Talmidim, Shebemei Bachrusa, when he was a Bocher, right, Eis Lomad Velimit B'Shivas Grodne, going back in Europe. So Chaim Shmulevich, Mirosh Yeshiva, he remembers when he was a Bocher learning in Grodne. He says, Nosa lehi nofesh lemispar yomim b'yeshivas Navardik. He go on vacation. People go on vacation. Rav Chaim went on vacation to Navardik, to another yeshiva. That's, he leaves one yeshiva to take vacation to go to another yeshiva. That was Rav Chaim. Betzel doidoi. Rav Goyen b'Avrom Yafin zatzal. Okay, Avrom Yafin, Navardik. Betkufes shehus hasham, when Rav Chaim was there, right, in Navardik, Nigashel doidoi. He goes over to his uncle, Rav Avrom Yafin. With Big Shoy, and he says, listen, show me sheyaraloi mihu habocher hamufcher biyoser ben kol b'nei shir. I want to show me the best of bocher. Sometimes you have someone who's looking for a shidduch. Say, show me the best of bocher. He was not interested in looking for someone for a shidduch, but he simply was just interested. He was curious. You have yeshiva, so many bocherim. So he goes over to his uncle. Show me the best bocher in the yeshiva. His biya rosh yeshiva, he says, al bocher mesuyim. Rosh yeshiva pointed to a particular bocher. V'omala, he said, zehu ho amkun ha-godl b'yoyse. This is the deepest bocher, not the biggest lamb in depth, in understanding. Right? Acha kachera loy bocher acha. Then he pointed and said, this is the biggest masmin. In other words, the different milers. This bocher is the biggest amkin. Very deep thinker. Another bocher, he said, he may not be the deepest thinker of the entire yeshiva, but he's the biggest masmin of the yeshiva. And then he pointed out different miles, top miles of different bokharim. Kol echod vitzayinus ha'amichedes. Each one had his specific mile specialty. Zebi Yerushalayim. This was the biggest Yerushalayim of the yeshiva. This was the biggest bok in the yeshiva. This was the biggest lamb in the yeshiva. Go for a turn on the side sheet. So Rabbi Chaim says to his uncle, you showed me five, right, excellent bocherim. This is the biggest in Yerushalayim. This is the biggest in Lomdus. This is the biggest, right, in Bekiyas. So Lomai said, who's the best bocher? Showed him 10 different bocherim. Each one top, in a different area. So who's the best bocher? So Rabbi Chaim says, V'shal esof sof mi ha-bocher ha-mufcher b'yoser. Lokhoi Rabbi Avrom, alachas mipinas hechla shiva. So Rabbi Avrom, his uncle, takes Rabbi Chaim to one of the corners, in the corner of the Beis Medrash, v'itzbi, and he points to a certain bocher. And says, "Zeh ha-bocher ha-mufcher b'yoyser mikol talmid ha-yeshiva." This bocher is the bocher ha-mufcher. He's the best bocher. So Tam Rav Chaim says, "How could he be the best bocher? He's not the biggest bocher because he pointed somebody else the biggest bocher, right? He's not the biggest Yerushalayim because he pointed somebody else. He said he's the biggest. I mean, he's the Yerushalayim. He's not the biggest Yerushalayim. That was somebody else. He's not the biggest lamdan because you pointed to somebody else. So if all the milas, right, are distributed, but how can that other bocher be? How can he be the best bocher?" If he didn't make the list of the 10 top ones in the different areas, what makes him the best bocher? Rav Chaim asked him. He said, "Harei kasher maniso shvachim shokol balei hamilas hanivchores." When you listed all the different people at different milas, lo yiskartu shemoi shel bocher zeklal. He didn't mention the name of this bocher. So he didn't make the list of all the specialties of all the different bocherim. This was top and this. This was top and this. How can that bocher now be the top? On the loy, Rav Avrom said, "Nochen." He says, "You're right. Malas bocher zeh though is shoyne, is totally different from all the other milas that I pointed out. The bocher zeh, this bocher, yesh mila, he has one mila that surpasses all the other milas. Shedargosa gavoye, he's the mavakish of the yeshiva. He's the one who has the greatest desire of becoming great, more than anybody else. There could be somebody now who's a bigger lam than him. Could be somebody else now maybe is a bigger yeshemayim than him. Could be somebody else maybe is a bigger bocher than him. But this bocher is the top in desire. He just has a thirst to grow and to grow and to grow. You know what it was? It was a stipler. Wow. Look at the bottom. It says, Oysoi mevakish, that mevakish. The person was a mevakish. She'olov hitzbir Rav Avrom Yafim. Shokad yom. By the way, he was a tremendous masman. This guy was sitting and learning day and night. Ba'omal b'toyrim. He certainly became the Keser HaTorah, you know, all over. And that's the Baal Kehilas Yankiv, Hagoyin Rabbi Yankiv Yisrael Kenevsky, Hanukra B'Fikoil HaStipler. So that gives us just a very, very wonderful little story that Rav Chaim Shlomo said. So let me just tell you, just conclude, we have 2 minutes more. Let me just tell you something. That in Volozhin, at the time, you know, the mother yeshiva, There are many, many good Bochrim. So one of the Goyin HaDor was Rabbi Eisel Lecharif. Rabbi Eisel was like, his name was Rabbi Isaac Charif, but for affection he used to call him Rabbi Eisel Lecharif, he used to call him. A well-known Goyin, tremendous Goyin, he comes to Volozhin, and he's looking for a Shidduch. He really was looking for a Shidduch, for his daughter. So the point is now, you can't prepare every Bochrim in the yeshiva. It's a puzzle. So what does he do? He'll pose a kasha, he'll pose a question. He'll pose a kasha, and the bacher is able to answer that kasha. That's the one, he says, that will be suitable for his daughter. So kachave, he goes and he poses a question. Lamaise says, and he gave them like 2 days or so. He said, because he has to leave after 2 days. He gave them like 2 days. 2 days, he says, everybody, they tried their hand, and no one came up with the answer. No one came up with the answer. No, if no one came up with the answer, so it was time to leave. Okay, you'll go to another yeshiva, maybe find somebody else. So he says, as the wagon was leaving Volozhin, he says, all of a sudden, Rabbi Eisler hears that someone from the back is running. There's a bocher running from the back. And he's running from the back, and he's saying, breathing, panting, Rabbi, the teretz. So Rabbi Eisler says, you mean you have the teretz? No, Rabbi, I don't care about the shidduch. I want to know the teretz. You told me the teretz. Said, oh, he says, that's the one that I want. He says, it's not important whether you knew the teretz, but if you have such a desire that you want to know the teretz, you're a mavakish. You're the one that is, it's truly someone, he says, that can expect godless to come out of him. So here's again another clear indication of what it means to be a shayiv, to want to be a mavakish. The best bracha of the yeshiva, the one who is really the mavakish. The chacham lev is not lav davke the gresta chacham. The chacham lev is a person who has a tremendous desire. And the one who has a tremendous desire will have this yatir ishmai, in fact, to have chacham as well.